Hello, everyone. This is Singing Lisa, and welcome to another Focus podcast. And of course, you know, we are excited because we continue to come to you with our COVID series. And also, we're adding to it heroes. And we consider people who are doing the great work that continues to provide care for the people in our city and, of course, around the world, heroes for all that they continue to do. And we have a very special gentleman here with us today who you will enjoy getting to know. He continues to make a difference in our city, and New Orleans is better for having him. And we are talking about William St. John LaCourte. He is an MD, MPH, he told me, CMD as well. So how are you today?
Oh, I'm a little tired. We had kind of a busy day.
Mm-hmm.
We had hospital work and then followed by office.
All right.
The good news is I have very capable people that work around me mm-hmm. and make me look good.
Yes. Well, that's important. And I think everybody wants to look good these days because we've been quite busy and we've not had a lot of places to go because we've been inside and quarantined, but not you. You're on the front line and you've been taking care of people who definitely need the service that you provide with their life in your hands. And so
the good news is I have very capable people that work around me mm-hmm. and make me look good.
Yes. Well, that's important. And I think everybody wants to look good these days because we've been quite busy and we've not had a lot of places to go because we've been inside and quarantined, but not you. You're on the front line and you've been taking care of people who definitely need the service that you provide with their life in your hands. And so can you share with us what was happening around the time when COVID began to be the big discussion of the day? And what was your mindset like that day that things started to change?
That's interesting to reflect back upon the beginning. Of all places, I was at Mar-a-Lago at a Trump event, and I found myself arguing with somebody at the dinner table about, I believe that we needed to have good testing, and he didn't think it was all that important. After a while, I realized how stupid I was arguing with a bond salesman about a medical issue. And I think in many ways that's typical of what we experience. Sometimes people that don't know a whole hell of a lot have very strong opinions. And one thing about COVID is a very humbling experience. You think you know something about it, and then within a couple of weeks, it's proven wrong.
Absolutely. So what was a typical day for you before COVID became a part of your daily routine?
Well, I get up, go to the hospital, go to the office, or go to the nursing home. And at my age of 71, I'm not working as hard as I used to. And fortunately, I have a good staff and nurse practitioners that help out, and we work together as a team.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of changes were you making at the time that you learned more about it?
Well, we were kind of changing from day to day. Early on, we had basically no testing. If we thought someone had COVID, we'd order a test, mm-hmm. and some non-physician epidemiologist at the state would decide whether or not they would run the test. And it was very frustrating because we'd wait for results. And then you'd learn a week or so later that the test that I ordered as a physician wasn't run because the epidemiologist didn't think it was indicated. Of course, the epidemiologist, not a physician, and didn't see the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, it was extremely frustrating not getting test results back. The other problem is there were not an adequate amount of personal protective equipment. And I was, in a way, I'm a hospitalist. I take care of my own patients. But the Touro hospitalists were becoming very frustrated because they knew that they and the nurses did not have all the personal protective equipment that they needed, basically. So we didn't have testing. Personal protective equipment was in short supply. The nursing homes had no training. The staff was LPNs, not RNs. And they had no personal protective equipment. So we didn't have what we really needed. I will say that with time, we started getting tests back. The other thing is we changed our procedures. Whereas we're used to multiple people seeing a patient going in the room, and what that meant was each one of them would have their own personal protective equipment that they used, and that was consuming a large amount of gowns and gloves and masks. When we looked at that, one of the head nurses said, you know, the nurses can do a lot of the stuff that other people are doing. We don't need the blood drawers to come in here, and we can do that. And so we learned that we could change the process and use less personal protective equipment. Also, we had people in isolation, which is never good, that didn't need it because we didn't have their results. The procedures were changed so we wouldn't use enough personal protective equipment. The other thing we did is we started getting lab results back quicker so we knew who really needed isolation and who didn't. We put everybody on Plaquenil and Azithromycin, and that was before the president talked about it. And that was based on experts from LSU, Ochsner, and Tulane putting it in our protocol. So that was basically what we had to deal with this. And so, and we didn't have a whole lot of ICU beds, but Turo, in rapid fashion, created new negative pressure ICU beds, which was really kind of awesome. So within a couple of weeks, we had much more ICU, much more personal protective equipment, and we were starting to get lab results, although it took too long to get them. So it was frustrating because I knew that people were being isolated and may not have needed it, which wasn't good for them. Mm-hmm. And also it resulted in needlessly using personal protective equipment.
Yes. Were there patients who, because you couldn't know who was positive or not, that you used maybe the physical signs that were common at the time, like the sweating or the breathing difficulty? Were those other areas that you used to just determine that they should be there?
Well, the problem is we deal with a sick group of people, and if they're in the hospital, they're going to be sweating, they're going to have shortness of breath. So later on, we learned that probably the best sign is loss of taste and smell, and that has been pretty reliable. In fact, I diagnosed a patient today and sent him to the emergency room based on loss of taste and smell.
Wow. That became really, like you said, critical, because that was not a first telltale sign at all. And that's a really interesting that that would be very, very key.
And, you know, I was a little bit concerned because of my age seeing these people. And as a male in his 70s, I was at higher risk.
Okay.
But I'd had lichen planus, which... this is an example.
Okay.
And the dermatologist put me on Plaquenil.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably a little bit more at ease because I'm on a drug which I felt was effective.
Okay.
And the Plaquenil story is kind of interesting because they were arguing out of both sides of their mouth. On the one hand, they were upset that people were using it on COVID patients, because then the lupus patients who'd been using it for years couldn't get it. But then the cardiologists and the pharmacists said, well, it's a dangerous drug because it causes cardiac problems. Mm. Well, every drug causes QT prolongation. And with all the patients we gave it to, we never saw a QT we saw it, but it didn't cause any problems, and we either reduced the dose or stopped it. So that whole brouhaha, which is where science kind of went out the window, and it's disturbing because even the Lancet published a bogus paper on negative effects of Plaquenil, which they subsequently had to retract. And the other interesting, and we'd exchange information while we were eating lunch, and two interesting treatments came to light when the pulmonologists were talking about patient was fine talking to me, and then all of a sudden just went into respiratory failure. Sudden respiratory failure, most of us should have said, oh, that's a pulmonary embolus. And it was only later that we realized the hypercoagulability of caused by the virus. And the cytokine storm, which is probably early in the disease, that's where Plaquenil was helpful. The other thing, we subsequently learned that vitamin D was helpful and that dexamethasone. So you can see this continuum of early in the disease, try Plaquenil because it's a mild anti-inflammatory. I was, in fact, using it for an inflammatory condition. And then later on in the disease, dexamethasone was found to be useful. Of course, that information was not available to us until basically most of our patients were discharged.
Yes. Did you have a high number? Now, you said testing, I know, took time because that was what everybody was waiting on in the beginning. When you started to get test results, what other changes did you make? Were you able to move some people out of isolation? Or
the best thing about the testing and getting results is we could take people out of isolation. There was another problem, which we learned firsthand, and that is hospitals, if they thought a patient was COVID positive, but weren't going to admit, were told not to run a COVID test. So those people wound up going back to nursing homes and assisted living centers. They also decided that patients that were terminal and on hospice with COVID would be sent back to nursing homes. Wow. And that was like sending a gasoline bomb. Into a paper mache house, because the nursing homes had inadequate personal protective equipment, no training for their staff. And I remember getting a fight with an ER doctor, not a fist fight, but a verbal disagreement, because she wanted to send a COVID positive patient back to the nursing home. And of course, we're in this politically correct time right now. So I got lectured to by the head of the ER for raising my voice to the doctor that wanted to create an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I was going to say.
For the nursing home.
And it's strange that she's a fellow doctor as well and did not understand the severity of that, because had not an outbreak happened at that point, or...
Well, don't forget that idiot Governor Cuomo was even worse, because he issued orders telling the nursing homes in New York that they had to take the COVID patients back, and also you couldn't ask the COVID status. So there were a number of things that we did wrong. There were a number of things that we did that were less than optimal. But I would have to say sending these patients with COVID back to places where the staff had no equipment, didn't have the training, and you had highly susceptible individuals was why we had an early mortality.
Yes, they had so many already existing underlying issues that prevented them any type of fight against this disease that already had many questions, because you just didn't know all the details.
Right. And so it was interesting. And the hospitals were on a very fast, or my hospital, Touro, was on a very fast learning curve with the negative isolation rooms, with the personal protective equipment, and the availability of testing. Things improved very rapidly. The other exciting thing was they realized they didn't need to ventilate people right away. At first, they didn't want BiPAP because it was going to spread disease.
What was probably the method besides quick adjustment? Did you all start to retrain the staff and try to get more, you know, people in there who knew exactly what to do?
Well, the problem is the people that were the public health people they should have said no COVID positive back in the nursing home
to
from
start
day
with.
One, but yes. They didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, the progression. So gradually they realized that this was a bad idea. And I think we have Governor Cuomo to thank for that, because when he sent all those patients back by executive order against the advice and, I guess, wishes of the nursing home owners and managers, they had the high mortality rate. Mm-hmm. Interesting, in Florida, which has a very strong medical directors association, the governor of Florida did not make that mistake. Mm-hmm. And they fortified the nursing homes. And it's an interesting response, because this was a disease where we quarantined healthy people and didn't take enough measures to protect the vulnerable patients. And the problem is, a nursing home is got has to, the nursing home has to be protected because you have the vulnerable residents, but you also have the workers, and the workers are doing direct patient care. They're feeding, they're cleaning, they're bathing, and those people are very susceptible. They have a high exposure. Mm-hmm. Then they bring it home to their families.
Yes.
So if you don't protect the nursing homes, you are creating a big problem in the community. And it was interesting for me to watch the change. And whereas I was getting lectured to for opposing sending a COVID positive back at one point, towards the end, and finally the public health people backed this, you couldn't send anybody back to a nursing home or a assisted living center without two negative COVID tests. And you needed two because the tests weren't 100% reliable even today. Mm-hmm. So then they started protecting the people in the nursing homes, and thus the employees, and thus the families of the employees. So that came a long way. And then on May 22nd, I was walking into Touro, and the band was playing. They were celebrating the discharge of a COVID-positive mother who I believe was in the hospital for 73 days. Mm-hmm. She was on a ventilator, and she gave birth to a child. She'd never seen the child, but this was a time when they were being reunited.
Yes.
And so it was a tremendous experience, because it was a victory, and it was a victory because they had taken a very sick lady and gotten her well.
I saw that. Yes.
Yeah. And of course, mm-hmm. they took maximal advantage. They had the national news there.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting because I had just returned from a nursing home, and at that point, I realized how many of these patients we'd successfully treated, and they survived. Mm-hmm. When they went back to the nursing home, however, they were in isolation, okay. which wasn't hospital-level isolation, but it was good enough so that they were able to stop the spread. I was in a nursing home this week, two nursing homes. They were tested for COVID, and both of them were zero. In fact, it made me feel that we had basically turned the corner on COVID, and was feeling very good about it until today.
Oh, well, I think that is a part of the process now that we're seeing. When we did have everyone staying home and we saw the progress in the numbers dropping, it was almost an announcement, okay, it's safe to go outside. And so now we have this uptick, is what one word is being used, because we have an increase now of people because they have been inside. And so would this be the group of people that were mostly asymptomatic? And so, or is it just because now they're out amongst other people?
Well, you can't keep the country shut down forever. And that was the other thing we were seeing, is the effects of the isolation.
Yes.
The unemployment, the depression, the drug use, alcoholism. And so while that was a good way to blunt the curve initially, long term it can't be used. The other problem is, I think the American Academy of Pediatrics came out and said the children have to start school.
Yes.
So I thought that, like, Fauci was very narrow. He was looking at it in terms of the epidemiology of just the COVID, but if you have to take a broader view, you have to worry about what's going on with the economy, what's going on with people in general. And poverty is not healthy for anybody. So if the measure you take, the cure is worse than the disease. So I think we began to realize you've got to come out. Unfortunately, that gave some people license to do really stupid things. Unfortunately, I can say that now because I sound like an old fart, basically.
Well, you're wise. You have wisdom.
Young people today, they do things like go to a bar they have COVID parties where they
intentionally.
Yeah, they expose themselves.
Unbelievable.
And what we've noticed is, yes, of course, the rate has gone up. We've got more testing. I'm sorry, the positive
results.
Test comes up, but we're not seeing people in the intensive care. We're not seeing the hospital admissions. I spoke to an ER doc at lunch, and I said, "Are you seeing any serious COVID?" She said, "We're seeing it, but I haven't seen serious COVID since April." And I spoke to the head hospitalist the same day on May 23rd. Where they were having the celebration of the mother's discharge. And I said, "Are you seeing any COVID?" And I will play you what he told me. Here we are celebrating.
Is there anybody in the COVID ICU?
There are no COVID patients in Turo's ICU.
What the hell happened to this disease?
It stopped being serious. It decided to play nice, I guess. But we haven't admitted anybody that needs oxygen in 2 weeks.
Same with me. I just left a nursing home full of COVID. Nobody's sick.
Nope.
And a bunch of recovered. Let me get another man on the street. Hi, Dragon Lady.
That's a case manager.
Hey, man. What happened to COVID? Do you have anybody in the ER that's sick?
I have nobody. Zero.
What happened to this disease?
Long gone, as of now.
And you're the head of the ER. Right here. Is that the hospice nurse?
What's that?
No, you are a doctor. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Right. It was amazing because the press is reporting this high incidence, and yet we're not seeing serious COVID.
Was it? Obviously, they didn't have all the details and information. Were they referring just to Touro, which still couldn't have been true?
Well, also East Jefferson. We got an email from the medical director saying, send us non-COVID patients. We only have two COVID patients in the intensive care unit. Now, at one point, I had 20 or more in the hospital, COVID positive, and then it went away. And East Jefferson only had two in the intensive care. And what happened is that people got it, but they did not get as deathly ill as they had gotten early on in the disease.
Mm-hmm. So this improvement just led them to believe that this was all done and everything was heading back to normal.
Well, the press is out there talking about the high incidence of new cases, mm-hmm. but you know, as far as I'm concerned, if a young person gets it and they stay home and they think they have, you know, the sniffles or something, that's totally different than what we were seeing with the older patients.
Right. And I think that's a part of the confusion, maybe those that are considered asymptomatic, and then many people who did just have certain symptoms, when they got to the hospital, they were sent home because they were not the more serious patients that ended up on ventilators or needed oxygen to that degree.
Well, if you send them home, that's fine. But if you send them to a nursing home, you're going to create a huge problem and create many more cases. So what we were doing, and you got to go back in time. The concern was the hospitals would be overwhelmed. And that's why you had to protect the hospital from admitting people that weren't that sick. Mm. The problem is that they may not have been sick, but they were contagious. Mm. So the hospital had to function as a repository. The other problem we were faced with is they created the convention center, which sounded good, 1,000 beds. But then you realize they couldn't take care of any nursing home patients because they didn't have the personnel to do it. Mm-hmm. They had ER docs, not doctors that specialized in long-term care. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't take care of any behavior problems.
What was the idea behind bringing people there in terms of people just being positive? Were they on the downside?
I think they were hoping they were. I'd have to go back and think about that. I think the thought was, well, this way we still isolate them. The problem was the nursing home population was not effectively treated there. In fact, they didn't want them. And I got a phone call one night from the nurse telling me they tested people in the nursing home and they were going to send them down to the convention center. Well, I talked to the medical director down there, and he was horrified because mm-hmm. he knew they couldn't take care of complicated nursing home patients mm-hmm. At the convention center. And in fact, I'd learned from one of the Tulane doctors that it was a big problem. And so what the convention center was doing was sending them out of the convention center over to Tulane, mm-hmm. but they had no paperwork, so Tulane had difficulty figuring out what's going on. You have to understand, the nursing home patient is a very complicated patient with multiple problems.
Yes.
And it's not simple. It's not a otherwise healthy person having a problem. It is a patient with some degree of renal impairment, dementia, possible behavioral issues. So very complicated. And the only place that you could take care of them when they're acutely ill is in the hospital, then you need a step-down procedure. Mm-hmm. And the health system responded very well, but it needed time to respond. Mm-hmm. And it was, to me, it was interesting. And it's kind of a humbling experience because you think you know something, and then you find out it's not what you thought.
Yeah.
Like, I had the conversation today, and I come to the office. I had the conversation today that there is no serious COVID coming into the hospital.
Okay.
I come to the office, and I've got a message from a friend of one of my patients who worked in a restaurant, telling me that he's sick and she thinks he's got COVID and gave me directions to go do a house call, which I didn't really want to do, and I didn't think I could do anything useful with a house call. So I called him up and he told me the critical fact that he'd lost taste and smell. I said, you get yourself over to Touro Emergency Room. Oh, and the other problem is he was short of breath.
Oh, goodness.
So he had, to me, I thought he had COVID, and he had serious COVID. Mm-hmm. And unless we got him to the hospital, he was at high risk for adverse outcome. So I sent him to the ER, and of course, he had COVID. Mm-hmm. So now we have a serious COVID case where we didn't think we'd have a serious COVID case. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, his restaurant is a hamburger restaurant by Tulane University, mm-hmm. which makes me think the students may have infected him. Mm-hmm. And I had another friend of mine call up and say one of his workmen has a pneumonia and he has fever, and he thought he had COVID. We send him in, the chest x-ray is classic COVID.
Wow.
With CAT scan, but the test was negative. We still think he's got COVID. Mm-hmm. So we got pulmonary consult, admitted him, and the pulmonary consultant said, I want head of infectious disease at LSU to see him because we can use remdesivir, which mm-hmm. is, you know, a game changer. The other thing is we started dexamethasone. So they would go into a negative pressure room, dexamethasone, infectious disease specialist, and we'll keep our fingers crossed. The one thing that we're not going to do is hurry to put him on a ventilator because the BiPAP that they're using now is a closed system and you're not blowing COVID virus all around the room and around the unit. So it's a continued learning experience.
Yes, I was going to say that, ongoing. And I mean, would it be true to say also, because everyone is different and everybody has a different condition, that that's presenting the different ways that COVID is showing up and you know, really making it a challenge to treat it with what might work with someone else?
Right. The other thing is, yes, there's a higher incidence of COVID right now, but if you look at what young people are doing, And the protests are an interesting example. Mm-hmm. The same leaders that talk about, you know, everybody needs to self-quarantine are not at all upset with all these people in the street doing all of these things.
Yes.
That's just hypocrisy.
Now, does that lend itself to the herd community, the herd immunity that I've been hearing about? Is that why you think they're not as upset? Is that an effort to see if that will work?
I think they've politicized. I think there's more politics going on here. I mean, the Lancet article that said Plaquenil or hydroxychloroquine was of no benefit was never should have been published. It was so bad they had to retract it. How often does that happen? Then there was a study at the VA, which was equally bad. So I think we're at a point where, let's face it, it's an election year. The Democrats have a certain bias and the Republicans have a certain bias. And you would like to think that healthcare is objective, but even Fauci, he's talking about double blind studies. And you have to remember, Fauci's an NIH bureaucrat. He didn't survive the NIH unless he knew how to play the bureaucratic political game. Mm-hmm. So my fan is Ben Carson. Mm-hmm. Ben Carson's actually treated patients. He's brilliant. He was head of a department at Johns Hopkins, pediatric neurosurgery. He came up with a procedure to separate conjoined twins.
The first one.
And he, if you listen to him, is looking at all of the factors. You can't keep kids out of school. It disrupts the kids' education. It may irreparably harm those kids. Additionally, how do the parents go back to work?
Right.
So I think Carson of within the administration, I think is someone that I believe to be better grounded, that's looking at the big picture. Mm-hmm. So the other problem that I'm a little bit scared of is what is going to happen when these schools reopen?
That's
I'm not as worried about, you know, the young kids, but the college kids are crazy. And as much as I don't like the fact they've shut down bars, I think you can count on them going to a bar and not observing social distancing. Perhaps they should have said nobody under 35 can go to a bar, because I like to think with maturity, we're more able to sensibly drink.
You would think that, and you might be right with the age difference, because that is not the first thing that they seem to be considering. And it just seems as though people are just really tired of being inside. So they've sort of unleashed themselves and just sort of gone with the wind, so to speak.
At that age, they're indestructible, as evidenced by the fact they had COVID parties to see who could get the COVID. Now, that kind of tells us something, because their experience with COVID is, for the most part, it's not that serious. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, you're going to have somebody that is susceptible. And that's why this disease is so interesting. You get that inflammatory cytokine storm that does a lot of damage. And how can you predict who's going to get it other than diabetes, hypertension, obesity, mm-hmm. and advanced age? But there are probably younger people that are at risk.
Yes. And another symptom or some term came up is blood clotting. Is that something that happens?
I mentioned that. Yeah. And that is, they realize that with a cytokine storm, you get hypercoagulability, and that's where you get the pulmonary emboli and probably strokes. Mm-hmm. One other thing that I've been impressed with is the people that get COVID get knocked down. And so we're having people that got COVID and they're not right, a lot of them. And the other problem is the healthcare system has been taxed, and probably you're going to see burnout among the healthcare workers that are running on low.
Well,
if not
yes,
empty,
we have. I've been doing this for, you know, pretty much the height of all of COVID, and I've definitely seen that. It's been a tremendous mental strain of people, especially facing death at such a rapid pace on a daily basis, and then leaving the workplace really to take work home, because am I infecting my family? And then I have to figure out how to teach my kids. Then I have to keep my family safe and myself. So about 1,000 things have happened.
I had two young nurse practitioners that did not want to see COVID patients, females. And that irritated me, because that meant I had to see the patients. They were not at risk, but I was.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're a healthcare worker, you're supposed to take care of people. Fortunately, I had PAs, physician assistants, and a young nurse practitioner student by the name of Amy Devine, who jumped right in. Of course, she was over at another hospital, and it was like going from hell to heaven when she found me, because they clearly didn't have enough personal protective equipment. Mm-hmm. We had more, and so she just jumped right into it. So we had my usual nurse practitioners didn't want anything to do with COVID. Then we had other people, the PAs and the nurse practitioner student, just jumped right in.
So that's
interestingly, Amy wound up with COVID. Mm. She had the antibodies, and she had minimal disease, as you would expect with a young person.
Mm-hmm. Well, that says a lot about her determination and her dedication to being a part of the solution.
And a new nurse practitioner I had came down from Massachusetts mm-hmm. to work with COVID. And at that point, UMC decided they didn't need her.
Oh.
So here's a NP that's ready to jump right in. And the system said, no, we're going to. And I think it was a question of money. They wanted their own people. Mm-hmm. So she had nothing to do. Unfortunately, very bright girl. And so she's working for me now. And so there's been kind of a turnover within my practice. And the people that are here now are people that are willing to get involved and take a risk to take care of patients.
Well, you have benefited in many ways, especially yourself. You have not contracted COVID, and so you have been in the fight, guiding everyone and actually treating and letting everybody know, you know, that this has to be taken care of. And so what do you feel is different about you, if you notice anything, from when this started to now?
Well, one advantage is I had Katrina to build on. It was just, oh, it's another Katrina.
Right.
I think perhaps I'm a little more humble, although that would be hard to do. But, you know, you think you know something, and then you find out you don't.
Yeah.
But I'm amazed at, you know, people use the word hero, which kind of irritates me, because I went to work. I got paid well for what I did. I had a whole bunch of nice people around me, and I had adequate personal protective equipment. I'm not the hero. The nursing home people are the hero. The people that clean the floors, that don't get paid what I get paid, absolutely, they're the heroes.
Absolutely. Well, I totally agree with you. And, you know, we will always say there's a category that you have to fall under. So under that category of hero, you are the representation for all of the people that have made the difference. And I think many have learned that the level is more equal today than it has been before, that people who are in the grocery store, we know, are much more valuable than ever considered before. And do you feel differently about all of your staff because of all that everybody's had to do?
Well, I'm really, really impressed by the staff that got in there and saw the patients at risk to themselves. It's interesting because I happened to watch Midway, you know, which was a turning point in the Pacific. And those people just did their job. And the workers that saw the patients and, you know, put on the equipment, and they're professionals, they did their job. It's interesting because as I was rounding, I ran into a very good nurse. And you do crazy things. She was weaving these things, and I didn't know what she was doing. And it was, turned out it was some kind of friendship bracelet. Mm-hmm. So she decided that I needed one, and so I put one on my, so this is my COVID friendship bracelet.
All right.
And when my last COVID patient was discharged, I called her up, and I said, can I take this off now? And she said, no.
Absolutely not.
And she said, it has to fall off. And I was hoping that when, if I could take it off, COVID was behind us.
Mm.
And today, as I say, is a humbling experience. I have one, maybe two people that are now sick. One may be sick with just normal stuff, and the other clearly has COVID. And what we saw after the COVID patients were discharged, people that came in from the nursing homes that were sick because the nursing homes were under stress, the personnel were under stress, and as a consequence, the patients didn't get the level of care, and I think the isolation is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got another chapter here, and I've got some anxiety about what's going to happen when we open up the schools.
Right.
I think the governor made the right call in shutting down the bars. Although I would have preferred if he let old farts like me that drink responsibly
have the seat.
be able to go.
Well, you know, it is a concern. I mean, age does make a difference in a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. And now, has all of the restriction been lifted on nursing homes, or where are we in
that? We still have isolation. The families have got trouble visiting. One of the most important things for the benefit of a nursing home is family visits. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's not normal.
I was going to say, you mentioned a story about when the first Touro patient was released, and I learned a story, wondering if you heard as well, of a woman who was not able to see her husband, who suffers with dementia, for over 114 days. And what she ultimately did was get a job at the facility.
Oh, wow.
And when she was finished, when she was done washing her dishes, she was told she could go and visit with the patients. And guess who one of the patients was? She was finally able to hug her husband, who had lost weight because he didn't have anyone, you know, giving him personal care, so to speak, the tender, loving care. He saw her through a window, you know, signs and all, like what we're doing. But she said he immediately recognized her. And so that just was the best day of her life, to be able to be reunited with him. And unfortunately, she couldn't take him home, which she was asked, because she's still working to be able to pay for him to be there. So it's an ongoing.
Right. Battle. It is. I there's a reason. I still have this bracelet.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll have a vaccine.
Yes, and I was going to ask about that, because you mentioned several medications, and I know the conversation has been great. Everybody, there's been some for it, some against it. Where are you on what is the best, I guess, at this point, and about a vaccine?
My belief, which is just my belief, is that since there's an inflammatory component to this, I go with the original recommendation of Tulane, LSU, and Ochsner. And that would be Plaquenil, Zithromycin. And we put everybody on it. We didn't have side effects. I think if it's more serious, dexamethasone. I think remdesivir is going to be helpful. I think BiPAP, not ventilation. If you need a ventilator, go ahead and use it. But they tolerate low oxygen levels better than the normal sick patient. Mm-hmm. And then I think remdesivir will be helpful. And I do believe the vaccines are coming along. I believe they are going to be here at warp speed, because one thing Trump did was cut the red tape. And I know, because I used to work in drug approval. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can do double-blind studies and all of this. And unfortunately, the patients don't have time for the usual process. These are extraordinary times. And I like the way they've got multiple different companies coming up with different vaccines. And so I'm optimistic we'll have one by year's end. Mm-hmm. And I think that will, once that happens, I think we're back to normal.
And when you say normal, are we looking at what many thought in the beginning was just flu-like symptoms, and many have died from the flu that were not as exposed in the news as this situation with COVID? Will we be at that type of normal? Or, I mean, we can
we'll be at normal. In fact, our normal now is probably more people are dying from tobacco disease than are dying from COVID. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of the COVID deaths are because of tobacco. Mm-hmm. Because they're the COPD, the lung problems, the heart problems. And it's interesting how we spaz out on COVID, but we allow cigarettes to continue to be sold. And we'll have our automobile accidents. We'll have our violence in the cities. We'll have our usual level of deaths from causes which we've come to accept as normal.
Yes. Not a good normal. And what they're calling a new normal is something that you're saying we're getting past because of the improvement that's happened through all of the steps that have been taken.
It's interesting. Amy, the nurse practitioner, and I have debated, because we're politically, you would think, opposite. She mm-hmm. was a big Bernie Sanders fan. And I think she realized that he's basically a big phony, that mm-hmm. what he's best at is raising money. And the very system that he criticized is the one that's getting us through this, and that is the hospitals. They're not perfect. They may tend to overcharge a bit, but they responded quickly with innovation. And the drug companies, which we all love to hate, unless, of course, they make a drug which is necessary for life, are coming up with the drugs and the vaccines.
Yes.
So it's kind of, I think everybody is kind of humbled by this. Yeah. And you've got the reality will be accepted by people in various degrees as this progresses.
Mm-hmm. Now, you may have thought at your age that retirement was somewhere in your future. I don't know if you had a certain number you were looking at, but with all of this that's going on, have you become reinvigorated to keep practicing or just to go on a little longer to see what else you can be a part of?
It is kind of exciting, and there are a couple of reasons for someone to avoid retirement. One, what do you invest in?
Well,
the stock market has shown us that that is extremely volatile, and who would have predicted the big sell-off caused by coronavirus? And this is kind of exciting. You're right. If I didn't practice and get exposed to what I'm doing now, I'd have to do something like cocaine to replace the excitement and the high that you get.
I thought you were going to say golf.
Ooh. The trouble with golf is it causes orthopedic damage. And that's, the sports, the country club type sports are also ravaging America, but because we're used to back and knee disease, mm-hmm. we accept it.
Yeah.
But no, I do yoga.
Okay. Beautiful.
And 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see me retiring. Although I'm lucky. I've got great people, and because of that, why would I leave them?
Absolutely. Well, from what I've learned and seen, being a part of you today, I know that they're very happy that you're a part of their life. And so I know they would want you to stay on. And we have all of these plaques on the wall to show why you are still here and why you are who you are. You mentioned a couple of things. And are you in favor, when you mentioned the different medications, would that word cocktail be something that we become familiar with as they combine medications to see how they help people?
Well, look what we did with AIDS. When I was training, AIDS was a death sentence.
Yes.
I think the minds that are working on this and the resources, COVID doesn't stand a chance. Even today, you're not going to have the death rate. But like I say, to me, it would be good to get rid of tobacco.
Yes.
And I brought that up with Ezekiel Emanuel, and he didn't really like the idea.
Well, you keep fighting. I think there's a reason that you are still here, to keep being the voice that says things that maybe people need to hear, that maybe they don't want to hear, but it's necessary.
That's the advantage of being an old fart. I mean, there are a couple of ways of looking at it. as opposed to the young person, mm-hmm. what do I have to lose?
There you go. You've been through a lot and you've said
Well,
a lot.
I've got, my natural life expectancy is, if I'm lucky, 10, maybe 15 years, mm-hmm. whereas a younger person has everything in front of them.
If they don't go to a COVID party.
But once again, most of them are going to get away with it.
It is incredible. I guess it's youth that just makes you take a chance on things like that.
Well, they're drawn to the excitement. I mean, they want to risk their lives, and this was a way to do it.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you, as we could come to a close, because I could go on with you. I'm in loving every moment. The mental health that we are facing right now, that is going to be an ongoing challenge. We've got 24-hour hotlines that people are calling because they need somebody to talk to. I think everybody needs some type of mental, support. But where do you see the support level rising? Because I've learned that there really is not a lot of support around the country for people in that area.
Well, that was an area because of one of my children that I became aware of our mental health failings.
Mm.
In fact, I met with the president on this twice about there are a couple of problems. One is you can have a person that has been certified by the coroner, by a doctor, as being gravely disabled, and you take away their right to freedom, mm-hmm. and you put them in a mental institution. And as a family member, if you say, what's going on with my loved one? They say, we can't tell you because of HIPAA.
Yes.
So as ridiculous as it is, the person that you put in there because it can't make decisions has now made a decision that blocks the family from learning what's going on. So that's kind of what I'm talking about, the baseline of death, disease, and dysfunction. And I've got a patient in a nursing home right now, seriously mentally ill. He is stable, but he's got epilepsy, diabetes, hypertension, and smoking addiction. Mm. He's decided he wants to leave the nursing home. And the state decided he needs to go because, oh, dementia, I left that out. So they've set it up, so he has to leave the nursing home.
Oh, my goodness.
So you have all these people under the bridges. We got mental health in America is a disaster, total disaster.
Yes.
And in the past, the psych places used to hijack and kidnap people, keep them in there longer than they needed to be. Now the game is played, we'll put them in until the insurance company says discharge them. Then we discharge them, and we don't tell the family what's going on. And that's why so many of them are in jail or under the bridge. So it will be much easier to deal with COVID than our dysfunctional mental health system.
Yes. We have many areas that lack all the attention that COVID has gotten. And like you said, should have been given attention long, long ago. So yeah, the fight continues. But do you have any final thoughts? I mean, I know, and tell everybody again, you cover all of these areas of care. You're in nursing homes. And what other area?
The office here, mm-hmm. hospital, mm-hmm. assisted living centers.
So there's nowhere we could put you that you couldn't take care of the business.
Well, when I trained, that's what we were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they have hospitalists. And,
yeah.
And the other thing is intensive care, which I've always liked, and I did a year of training in that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I like the idea that I've got really good intensive care people in front of me.
You like the team effort, I can tell. And it makes a difference.
Well, you yeah. can't. Today, you have to work with people.
Yes.
You might ask Amy mm-hmm. what she's thinking.
What she's thinking? Yeah, we talked a little bit.
Hour.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, are you a fan of the technology? I think when we talk about the 100-year pandemic that happened, you know, that they compare things to, today is night and day compared to all the technology that is making all of that happening more possible.
Well, technology is a double-edged sword. I mean, if it weren't for the airplane technology, we probably wouldn't have the pandemic. So
right.
somebody with a brain has got to, I'm sorry, somebody with judicious judgment has got to figure out how do we apply the technology.
And so are you looking forward to another Mardi Gras, or is that history?
I'm a Yankee, so it's hard for me to get into Mardi Gras.
Okay. So no problem. If you don't see it, it's okay.
If I don't see it, it's okay. And frankly, another problem is professional sports. If I don't see those, I'm fine.
Okay. Many gatherings are threatened. So yeah, we've got a different future coming very quickly.
Well, vaccine will move everything back to where it was, at least for this problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that people listening and watching take your advice and, you know, move forward with tobacco and all the other areas that are
tobacco
the first.
And mental health
yes.
Are there and need to be addressed. But you would think that mm-hmm. people would say mm-hmm. enough is enough.
Yeah.
Like my mm-hmm. wife's mother and father both died of tobacco disease.
Mm.
He had lung cancer. She had COPD.
Mm-hmm. Where are you on gun control with what is, I know we've had people do some silly things, you know, since they've been able to get out of the house, but that seems to be just another rampant area.
I don't know. I think most of the people that are doing the killings aren't going to. There are too many guns readily available. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, is someone who's going to do something illegal going to be
held accountable?
No. Are they going to be dissuaded by the fact that the gun is? I mean, most of the criminals have the guns illegally. Now, can you reduce the number of guns? It's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't have a gun because I'm afraid I would either use it on somebody or somebody like my wife would use it on me. And as you probably know, mm-hmm. Most murders are done by the spouse.
Oh, so you're keeping things peaceful at home, right?
No, I'm keeping them non-lethal.
Are you socially distant?
Well, after a certain number of years, that happens naturally.
Oh, my goodness. A hand sanitizer is something you can invest in because that seemed to go through the roof with COVID, the mask. So, you know, you might have.
I'm not sure about the mask and I'm not sure about the hand sanitizer.
Really? Were you?
I know that soap and water is. I don't use hand sanitizer.
Can you say that again?
I don't know about hand sanitizer. I do know about soap and water. That kills the virus.
Yes.
The recommendation is, 20 seconds of soap and water?
Yeah. Happy birthday.
And I'm not sure about the mask.
Well, there's been a lot said about it.
It's back and forth.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's no harm, although apparently there's some studies about the cloth mask. I change mine every day.
Mm-hmm. So they can be washed is what I'm learning as far as those.
You know,
what
we ought to do is do this in 6 months. I have a feeling we'll be
talking.
Well, by then we'll have it. 6 months, this thing may basically go away with a vaccine.
Yeah.
Assuming the vaccine doesn't kill us.
Uh-oh. Well, I am going to say, Dr. LaCourte, in closing, it's again been a pleasure, and I thank you for taking the time to be with us today, sharing all that you know, and we'll talk again when that vaccine is working.
That'll be fun, but I have a feeling that the vaccine will not be a straight line. There'll be many twists and turns to that road.
I'm sure, as we've seen so far. Thank you again and take care of yourself.
You too. Be careful.